This one.
Why do I have to?
I don't know. That's what works. Okay, so basically the question is, where have we been so far? We talked in the first week about the nature of God. We talked about the fact that God always does what he says he will do. And a lot of time people think, he's really not going to do that. You know, he's not going to do that. Not to us. We're too good for that. You know, but God does what he says. He keeps his promises and he keeps his warnings. Right? He does what he says he will do. The second class, we talked about the historical background of Ezekiel. Goes all the way back to Moses, to we read from Leviticus what God said. Here's some blessings I will give you if you keep my covenant. And here's some curses that will befall you if you do not. And we looked at that. You know, he said that. And then we looked at what happened during the years of the kings of Israel, and in particular the king Manasseh, who was sort of the worst of the worst, brought in idolatry and all kinds of evil into the nation of Israel, into Jerusalem itself, and even into the temple. And so the temple of the Lord. And so basically that's the background. God's getting ready to do what he said back in Leviticus he was going to do. Class three, we talked about the vision and call of Ezekiel. We saw this incredible picture with the God, the vision of God with the fire and the lightning and the storm, and we saw the cherubim and the wheel in the middle of the wheel and all those things, and we talked about all of that. But obviously, a vision intended to communicate to Ezekiel that God is here and God is getting ready to do something, and it's not going to be a happy time. Okay, so that was class three. Class four is going to be all about street theater. And we're going to see the message of God carried out in three acts. Act one is the siege. And so we're going to see the siege of Jerusalem. And, you know, we'll see what God called on Ezekiel to communicate. Remember that Ezekiel was in his house. He was confined to his house, his tongue stuck to the roof of his mouth, he could not talk, and let's see, what's going on here? You know, it looks like we have a map of Jerusalem. I wonder what he's going to do. This Ezekiel is stuck in his house, and we know he's a prophet. He's building something outside the city. Looks like it's a ramp. Looks like somebody is going to be able to come into the city. And he is going to lie on his side with an iron pan. What do you think this means? I don't know. He's lying on his side. And he does it. He's going to do this day after day after day. And no back. So what's happening here? Why is Ezekiel doing this? I'm sure that people, the first day they saw him doing this, you know, they thought, he's a little bit off his rocker. You know, what's he trying to communicate? Maybe God's going to rescue us. Maybe that's what it is. He's coming here and he's going to rescue us. But no, that's the city of Jerusalem. And that iron pan and that siege, it looks like we're going to be besieged. Now, Jerusalem has been besieged before. So maybe that's what it's about. I don't know. But that's the, he's going to lie on his side and he's going to do this. And he keeps doing this day after day after day. Maybe we should count and see how many days he does that. Okay. Let's go to chapter 4, Ezekiel chapter 4, okay? So our Ezekiel is going to take a break while we study this a little bit, and then maybe he'll be back. Let's see. Okay, Ezekiel 4, verse 1. Now, son of man, take a clay tablet, put it in front of you, and draw the city of Jerusalem on it. We saw that, right? Then lay siege to it. Erect siege works against it. Build a ramp up to it. Set up camps against it and put battering rams around it. Then take an iron pan, place it as an iron wall between you and the city, and turn your face toward it. It will be under siege, and you shall besiege it. This will be a sign to the house of Israel. So Ezekiel, even though he's banished to his house, basically, he can't talk, he's going to act out this siege. And over time, you know, people are going to, you know, the Israelites or they're the people in, they're now in Babylon. So he's doing this in Babylon, right? So the exiles who are around him are able to come see what he's doing over a period of 390 days, we'll find. And in 390 days, he's lying on his side. Wow. And then for 40 days, he's lying on his other side. They get to see what he's doing. And after a while, anybody who wanted to had a chance to see that, right? And he's basically just acting that out. Verse 4, he says, "Then lie on your left side and put the sin of the house of Israel upon yourself. You are to bear their sin for the number of days you lie on your side. I have assigned you the same number of days as the years of their sin. So for 390 days you will bear the sin of the house of Israel. After you have finished this, lie down again, this time on your right side, and bear the sin of the house of Judah. I have assigned you 40 days, a day for each year." So this went on for a long time. Now, I want you to put yourself kind of in Ezekiel's shoes. How did this feel from Ezekiel's perspective? You know, God was asking him, not just asking, but commanding him, to do something that was not exactly comfortable, not exactly easy. And we'll find there was other hard parts of it here in a few minutes. But he was given a 390 days is more than a year, right?
Yes.
And 40 days is more than a month, you know. So it's quite a length of time that he was doing this. Verse 7 says, "Turn your face toward the siege of Jerusalem and with bared arm prophesy against her. I will tie you up with ropes so that you cannot turn from one side to the other until you have finished the days of your siege." Okay, this was not a pleasant street act going on, right? It was, you know, you could say, you know, maybe he was the first mime, street mime, okay, acting this out, and people are watching him, you know, wonder what this is all about, you know. You know, here's a door, here's a, you know. But no, he was besieging Jerusalem. So we have a picture. This is a fairly traditional picture of Ezekiel doing his thing with a group of people watching him, wondering, discussing what this eccentric prophet is doing. And, you know, they, like I said, Ezekiel, Jerusalem had been besieged before. So it was not necessarily unexpected, nor even hard for them to accept that maybe there would be a siege. But they believed that God was going to save them. But what they eventually are going to figure out is that God was the one besieging them. That it was not, God was not on the inside defending Jerusalem, but he was on the outside conducting the siege. We have another picture here, maybe a little more modern view of it. I don't know if you can see that, but you don't know what it looked like. But here he has the Jerusalem under siege with the iron pan lying on his side. And I imagine he was, you know, maybe this is what he looked like on day 300 or something. Yeah. So that was Ezekiel. So there was 390 days for Israel's sin and 40 days for Judah's sin. So what do those days represent? If you're reading this in the NIV, it says those were represented the years of their sin. If you're reading it in the English Standard Version, it says it's the years of their punishment. And really, they're translating the same word. There's no discrepancy on what the Hebrew says. It's a question of what did that word mean. It could mean either. It was kind of an ambiguous word. And so what were these 390 days? If you take a literal translation, it says, "For I have laid on you the years of their iniquity, according to the number of days, 390 days, and you shall bear the house of Israel's iniquity." So, you know, it kind of sounds like it, to me, like it's talking about the years of their sin, but the ESV took the other perspective, and I think people debate that because it's really kind of hard to pin down what are those days, especially when you get to the 40 days. Again, the 40 days, do they represent the years of sin or the years of punishment? Again, it's a little bit ambiguous in the Ezekiel 4:6. Basically says, "You shall bear the house of Judah's iniquity for 40 days, a day for a year." So you're bearing their iniquity. Now, it's not like he's paying the penalty for their sin. He's suffering under their iniquity, right? Is kind of the idea. All right. But let's talk about the 390 years. It's not clear exactly what years those were. There were 345 years from the beginning of the dividing kingdom to the fall of Jerusalem. So that's not 390. But if you add in Solomon's reign, that brings you to 385 years. So maybe that's what was happening. Maybe we're getting closer to the years, if 390 is the years of their sin. And, you know, again, if you remember from Solomon, he married a bunch of foreign wives and started being led astray into their idolatry from that. So maybe that's what he's talking about. But then the 40 years becomes even more problematic, because Manasseh by himself ruled for 55 years. You know, what about Ahaz? What about Jehoiakim and others? I mean, there's lots of sin in Judah outside of Manasseh's rule. So was it years of punishment? But the Babylonian captivity lasted 70 years. So it's a difficult, it's a difficulty. The question then is, are those symbolic numbers? And maybe that's the way to resolve the discrepancy. Some people have proposed that 390 years represents 40 lashes minus 1, 39 for each of the 10 tribes. I don't know. That's speculation. Some people have said that Israel, when it says those, he's bearing the sin of Israel, that was the grand total Israel, which includes Judah. So this, maybe that 390 years was the whole period of the divided kingdom, or going back to Solomon, and that represented both of them. And then 40 being a symbolic number. You know, there were 40 appears all over the place in the scriptures. Just a couple of cases of that are 40 days of rain in the flood in time of Noah. There were 40 years in the desert, right? There's a number of other 40s. Jesus fasted for 40 days, you know. Moses fasted for 40 days. So you don't really know. And then the other thing people have noticed is, 390 plus 40 equals 430. And that's how long they were in Egypt. But, you know, so we don't really know. The bottom line is, we can ask God about that when we get there. But, so people have spent a lot of time debating things like that, and kind of, rather than deal with the fundamental message here, is God's wrath was coming, right? And, you know, there's really no disputing that, no vagueness about that. It's quite clear. And so as these people are watching Ezekiel, in the next slide, as they're watching Ezekiel besiege Jerusalem here, they didn't know it was 390 days and 40 days as they're watching, right? What they knew was, this is going to go on for a while, and this is what the prophet is saying. And of course, they didn't believe him in general. What were the exiled people thinking? They were hoping for the Lord to come to their rescue. But Ezekiel portrayed the Lord being outside of Jerusalem, besieging the city. So now the Lord was their enemy. And if the Lord's your enemy, you got no hope. God is your only hope. And if God is your enemy, then there is no hope. So there was no hope of rescue. And that was the message. We're going to find that. I'm sorry, what? Get it down? Yeah. Yeah, thanks. Okay. So again, in verses 7 and 8 says, turn your face, thank you. Turn your face towards the siege of Jerusalem, and with bared arm prophesy against her. You know, basically, Ezekiel is suffering under this whole prophecy that God has given him to do. So, you know, again, so that was act one of our play. And then there was more. It wasn't just the siege of Jerusalem. Now we have act two, the famine. Okay? There was what we're going to have is you can flip. Somehow we've gotten behind. Okay, flip again. There we go. Okay. The cue for our mime. So what's he going to do now? This has something to do with the famine. It's like he's getting out a pot, some scales. He's getting out some more pots. And what else do we have here? Oh, something hot. A fire. Okay. We have a fire. Okay, What's he doing? What do you think? Looks like he's measuring out something, a very small amount, it seems, to cook. Maybe he's going to cook something. Maybe he's going to cook his dinner. What do you think? He's mixing ingredients, a couple other ingredients. He's putting it in the pan and cooking it over the fire. It's hot. He's cooking it over the fire. And then he takes it out, and he's going to eat this small thing, and that was dinner. And now he's back to lying on his side, you know. The pan is hot now. Cool. So there we have the famine. All right, Act 2, the famine. So let's see, what was that all about? Does the Bible tell us what he was doing here? 4 verse 9 says, "Take wheat and barley, beans and lentils, millet and spelt. Put them in a storage jar and use them to make bread for yourself. You are to eat it during the 390 days you lie on your side. Weigh out 20 shekels of food to eat each day and eat it at set times. Also measure out a sixth of a hin of water and drink it at set times. Eat the food as you would a loaf of barley bread. Take it, bake it in the sight of the people using human excrement for fuel." The Lord said, "In this way, the people of Israel will eat defiled food among the nations where I will drive them." Does that sound appetizing to you? You know, you can go to the store today and buy something called Ezekiel bread. You can actually make Ezekiel bread, you know, using these ingredients. But let me, I hope I don't, you know, pop your bubble too much here. This was a starvation diet. This was not a healthy diet. That was enough food to keep a healthy male alive for a year. But he would have been emaciated at the end of the year. I mean, this might have been, you know, 500 calories a day kind of thing. Okay, he was by the end of the 390 days, he was not looking good. Okay, the water, he was drinking maybe a pint of water a day. Okay. How much water does a person need in a day?
2 liters.
2 liters, people say? Okay. This is a quarter of that, roughly. So this was a starvation diet, and this was representing what Jerusalem was going to be living on for the next so many, you know, during the siege. Okay. Verse 14. "Then I said, 'Not so, sovereign Lord. I have never defiled myself. From my youth until now, I have never eaten anything found dead or torn by wild animals. No impure meat has ever entered my mouth.' 'Very well,' he said, 'I will let you bake your bread over cow dung instead of human excrement.'" Woohoo! Cow dung. Let's party. You know, not too good, right? Still not a particularly appetizing meal. Yeah, he's still going to convey the point, right? It's defiled food. This is defiled food, and it's not very much of it. Okay, they'll be on starvation rations. So what does it mean? Verse 16. He then said to me, "Son of man, I am about to cut off the food supply in Jerusalem. The people will eat rationed food in anxiety and drink rationed water in despair, for the food and water will be scarce. They will be appalled at the sight of each other and will waste away because of their sin." Okay, so this is what God was doing. This was what was getting ready to happen. Ezekiel was telling them what was going to happen. He was not telling them, "Jerusalem, repent or else this is going to happen." He was saying, "This is going to happen. This is coming. And when it comes, you're going to know who did it, because I told you before it happened." Okay, and who else could do that? So this the purpose of this message, yes, individuals could repent, but it was not going to stop God from sending the punishment, the judgment. Okay, and this was exactly what God had said he would do 900 years before. Leviticus 26, verse 26, he says, "When I cut off your supply of bread, 10 women will be able to bake your bread in one oven, and they will dole it out the bread by weight. You will eat, but you will not be satisfied. Okay? So there is going to be a famine. Okay? That was part two. And then we move on to Act 3. I wonder what this is going to be about. Here comes our street mime again. He has a sword. That's a scary thing. What's he going to do? He's cutting his hair with a sword. He's cutting off his hair. This is a priest cutting off his hair. He's shaving himself with a sword. Uncomfortable, unpleasant. He's getting all the hair out from under the chin and everything. You know, I didn't do that this morning. So here he is. He's taking the hair that he's cut off. What's he doing with it? He's chopping it up. He's attacking it with the sword. He's attacking the hair with the sword. What's he going to do? He's throwing some of it into the city. He's taking some of it. What's he going to do with this part? He's taking some of it and stuffing it inside his shirt. Okay, and some of it, you know, he's going to do what? He's throwing it into the fire. Ooh, I wonder what that represents. So there we have the street mime acting out. That was something very different. You know, he's been doing the lying on his side for the 390 days and the 40 days. He's been doing the eating of the Ezekiel bread for all that time. And it's the same thing every day. But now there's something different. Okay? And he's telling them about the fall of Jerusalem. Let's see what God has told us about that. Says, "Now, son of man, take a sharp sword and use it as a barber's razor to shave your head and your beard. Then take a set of scales and divide up the hair. When the days of your siege come to an end, burn a third of the hair inside the city. Take a third and strike it with a sword all around the city and scatter a third to the wind, for I will pursue them with drawn sword. But take a few hairs and tuck them away in the folds of your garment. Again, take a few of these and throw them into the fire and burn them. A fire will spread from there to all Israel." So what does the hair represent? It's the people of Jerusalem. Okay, he's going to shave. Okay, now, if you're familiar with the prophecies God made against the northern kingdom when Assyria came, he said, "I'm going to use Assyria as a razor. I'm going to shave your head and I'm going to..." Yeah, it was basically, "I'm going to humiliate you publicly in front of the world." Okay? And he did, and he destroyed the nation, the 10 tribes, the northern kingdom. So then what he's taken here, this is a reference back to that. Okay? For those who are familiar with the law, which would have included these elders that were standing around. But he says, you know, he was going to shave them with a sword. So the sword was going to be involved in this whole thing. It says, when the days of your siege come to an end, burn a third of the hair inside the city. Take a third and strike it with a sword all around the city and scatter a third to the wind. So he's dividing it into three parts. And take a few of the hair. And basically, they're going to be destroyed in several different ways, right? Some of them are going to die in the city from the famine. Some of them are going to be basically destroyed by the armies trying to escape. And some of them are going to be scattered to the wind. Okay, scattered to the wind. And that was what's going to happen to the remnant that was in Jerusalem, to those who were remaining. And that was what was going to happen. So again, shaving the head was being put to shame. It was something that was forbidden to priests. So basically, Ezekiel, by acting this out, was defrocking himself. Okay. The scales represented divine justice. God was going to weigh them, and he was going to send judgment on them based on what he saw. Divided into thirds. Some were going to die in the city. Some were going to die fleeing. And some were going to be scattered to the winds. But a few would be preserved. Okay. And then the Lord explains it. Okay. In verse 5. Chapter 5, verse 5. "This is what the sovereign Lord says. This is Jerusalem for which I have set in the center of the nations." That's an important phrase. "I have set in the center of the nations with countries all around her. Yet in her wickedness, she has rebelled against my laws and decrees more than the nations and countries around her. She has rejected my laws and has not followed my decrees. Therefore, this is what the sovereign Lord says. You have been more unruly than the nations around you and have not followed my decrees or kept my laws. You have not even conformed to the standards of the nations around you. Therefore, this is what the sovereign Lord says. I myself am against you, Jerusalem, and I will inflict punishment on you in the sight of the nations. God had placed Jerusalem in the center of the nations, like a city set on a hill. It was supposed to demonstrate the glory of God to the people around. And had they obeyed God, that would have happened. You know, people would have looked at them. They would have been a model country, a model nation. People would have been in awe of their righteousness, of their wisdom, of how God blessed them. But because of that, because they didn't obey, God was not able to glorify himself in that way, right? Because they didn't see it. So God glorified himself in another way, by publicly punishing and humiliating Jerusalem because of their sin. God couldn't have the world looking on saying, okay, God just lets this go. Okay. So God said, because you have not done what I called you to do, you have not lived up to what you were called to do, I will punish you in front of the people, and by that I'll bring myself glory. Verse 9, because of all your detestable idols, I will do to you what I've never done and will never do again. Therefore, in your midst, parents will eat their children. Children will eat their parents. I will inflict punishment on you and will scatter all your survivors to the winds. Shocking, shocking warnings. And that's the same thing God had said 900 years before. Leviticus 26:29, you will eat the flesh of your sons and the flesh of your daughters. Leviticus 26:33, I will scatter you among the nations and will draw out my sword and pursue you. Your land will be laid waste. Your cities will lie in ruins. So they should have known that this would come if they were going to disobey God. Remember, God always does what he says he will do. Okay. And so, you know, a lot of times we can tend to think, well, God is love. God will really not send people to hell. Surely he won't. We should learn from the story of Ezekiel and what he did at the end of the kingdom of Judah. We should learn that God does what he says he'll do. And we should take his warnings seriously. Don't be deceived. God does not mock. Man will reap what he sows. Okay. Chapter 5, verse 11. Therefore, as surely as I live, declares the sovereign Lord, because you have defiled my sanctuary with all your vile images and detestable practices, I myself will shave you. I will not look on you with pity or spare you. A third of your people will die of the plague or perish by famine inside of you. A third will fall by the sword outside your walls, and a third I will scatter to the winds and pursue with drawn sword. Verse 13, then my anger will cease, and my wrath against them will subside, and I will be avenged. And when I have spent my wrath on them, they will know that I, the Lord, have spoken in my zeal. They will know that I am the Lord. Okay? So you know, we could talk more about the Lord's complaint against them. In Jeremiah, he had talked about this, you know, almost a generation earlier. Jeremiah 2:10, cross over the coast of Kittim and look. Send to Kedar and observe closely. See if there's ever been anything like this. Has a nation ever changed its gods? Yet they're not gods at all. But my people have exchanged their glory for worthless idols. Be appalled at this, O heavens, and shudder with great horror, declares the Lord. God's wrath, his fury, was kindled by their idolatry. And you know, those who know are held to a higher standard, aren't they? Okay, we see that throughout the New Testament. Luke 12, verse 47 says, that servant who knows his master's will and does not get ready or does not do what his master wants will be beaten with many blows. But the one who does not know and does things deserving punishment will be beaten with few blows. For everyone who has been given much, much will be demanded. And from the one who has been entrusted with much, much more will be asked. Okay. Again, John 15:22. If I had not come and spoken to them, they would not be guilty of sin. Now, however, they have no excuse for their sin. Okay, Jesus himself. Okay. 2 Peter 2:20. If they have escaped the corruption of the world by knowing our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ and are again entangled in it and overcome, they are worse off at the end than they were at the beginning. It would have been better for them not to have known the way of righteousness than to have known it and then turn their backs on the sacred command that was passed to them. Of them the Proverbs are true. A dog returns to its vomit, and the sow that is washed goes back to her wallowing in the mud. Okay. So take it seriously. The warnings come to us of what we're seeing that he did in Ezekiel. Chapter 5, verse 16. When I shoot you with my deadly and destructive arrows of famine, I will shoot to destroy you. This is not a spanking. Okay. I will shoot to destroy you. I will bring more and more famine upon you and cut off your supply of food. I will send famine and wild beasts against you, and they will leave you childless. Plague and bloodshed will sweep through you, and I will bring the sword against you. I, the Lord, have spoken. Okay. I mean, that's a prophecy of doom, right? This is the end. So let's flip over to Ezekiel 7, and let's hear what the Lord had to say in his own words about what happened.
The end. The end has come upon the four corners of the land. The end is now upon you, and I will unleash my anger against you. I will judge you according to your conduct and repay you for all your detestable practices. I will not look on you with pity or spare you. I will surely repay you for your conduct and the detestable practices among you. Then you will know that I am the Lord. This is what the Sovereign Lord says. Disaster, an unheard of disaster is coming. The end has come. The end has come. It has roused itself against you. It has come. Doom has come upon you. You who dwell in the land, the time has come. The day is near. There is panic, not joy, upon the mountains. I am about to pour out my wrath on you and spend my anger against you. I will judge you according to your conduct and repay you for all your detestable practices. I will not look on you with pity or spare you. I will repay you in accordance with your conduct and the detestable practices among you. Then you will know that it is I, the Lord, who strikes the blow. The day is here. It has come. Doom has burst forth. The rod has budded. Arrogance has blossomed. Violence has grown into a rod to punish wickedness. None of the people will be left. None of that crowd. No wealth, nothing of value. The time has come. The day has arrived. Let not the buyer rejoice, nor the seller grieve, for wrath is upon the whole crowd. The seller will not recover the land he has sold as long as both of them live, for the vision concerning the whole crowd will not be reversed. Because of their sins, no one of them will preserve his life. Though they blow the trumpet and get everything ready, no one will go into battle, for my wrath is upon the whole crowd. Outside is a sword, inside are plague and famine. Those in the country will die by the sword, and those in the city will be devoured by famine and plague. All who survive and escape will be in the mountains, moaning like doves of the valley, each because of his sins. Every hand will go limp. Every knee will become as weak as water. They will put on sackcloth and be clothed with terror. Their faces will be covered with shame, and their heads will be shaved. They will throw their silver into the streets, and their gold will be unclean thing. Their silver and gold will not be able to save them in the day of the Lord's wrath. They will not satisfy their hunger or fill their stomachs with it, for it has made them stumble into sin. They were proud of their beautiful jewelry and used it to make their detestable idols and vile images. Therefore, I will turn these into unclean things for them. I will hand it over all over as plunder to foreigners and as loot to the wicked of the earth, and they will defile it. I will turn my face away from them, and they will desecrate my treasured place. Robbers will enter it and desecrate it. Prepare chains, because the land is full of bloodshed and the city is full of violence. I will bring the most wicked of the nations to take possession of their houses. I will put an end to the pride of the mighty, and their sanctuaries will be desecrated. When terror comes, they will seek peace, but there will be none. Calamity upon calamity will come, and rumor upon rumor. They will try to get a vision from the prophet. The teaching of the law by the priest will be lost, and will the counsel of the elders. The king will mourn, the prince will be clothed with despair, and the hands of the people of the land will tremble. I will deal with them according to their conduct, and by their own standards I will judge them. Then they will know that I am the Lord.
Yeah. That was, of course, our own Glenn Hayes doing the voice of God there. And, you know, that's hard to listen to, isn't it? You know, it tells you the depth of the wrath of God against rebellion, against sin, against his people when they don't keep his commands, when they do not bring him glory in front of the people around them. You know, God is love. God is merciful. He sent Jesus, but he's also said a man will reap what he sows. Okay, and that didn't change between the Old and New Testament. You know, so we, you know, the lesson for us is to take God's warning seriously. The fear of the Lord is still a part of the Christian doctrine, right? And we need to recognize what the wrath of God looks like, what it sounds like, and never to let it be directed at us personally. So next week, we will be talking about Ezekiel's second vision. He's going to have another vision, and we will explore what God shows him there. And so at this point, that'll be the end of our class, and please go pick up your kids for worship service.